Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we talk about how to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. And now, here's your host, Stephen Libman, managing partner of Integrity Holdings Group.
Welcome back to the Free From Wall Street podcast. My name is Steve Libman. I am your host, managing partner of Integrity Holdings Group. Today, we have a good friend and a mentor, Mike Simmons, in the studio. Thanks, Mike, for joining us, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm stoked for you to have this podcast. So this is going to be fun. It's fun when you do this with people you know. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I was just looking at through some of my photos this morning, and exactly a year ago, we were on safari. Man. Checking out baby elephants and rhinos, and
that was
locked down.
That was far and away the coolest experience I've ever had. That was so awesome.
People ask me, like, what's your favorite trip? And my wife and I love to travel. We've been to Ireland and Maui and Costa Rica. And the most unexpected trip that became my favorite was African safari. I never thought I wanted to do it. And thank God for our other friend, Bill Allen, who said, we're going to go do this here. And we all kind of said, wow, that's one heck of a feat to do, but we did. And man, what a great time that was.
I'll tell you what, I really, to be honest with you, I can say this now because it turned out to be the trip of a lifetime, but I was a little bit hesitant. I was dreading it a little bit. I never thought I wanted to do an African safari either. It never was something that was on my bucket list or anything I wanted to do. And that 20-hour flight was definitely not something that I wanted to do. So when you couple a 20-hour flight for a destination I had really little interest in, like, I was like, this is an obligation and I just got to get through it. Yeah. But I tell you what, unfortunately, the only thing that would have made it better is if my wife could have gone. But when I was there, I called her and I'm like, you know what? If you wanted to come here and do this, I would literally get off the plane back in the States, hop on another plane and come straight back. Like, yes. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
And I'm excited now because I'm like, man, now I can see my kids. Right now they're 6, 2, and 6 months old. So we're not going anytime soon, but I can see as they get older, doing that trip again myself. I mean, the 8-10 hour flight, I think we flew 9 hours to Istanbul, Turkey, and had an 8-hour layover. Man, I'll tell you, if you're going to do it, save, and fly first class because it's a long flight.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's a long flight. I know. I debated that too, first class or not. I ended up not doing it, but my goodness, it would have been great to lay down.
After a while, right?
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe that was just a year ago. It was so funny because, you know, now my son Noah is here, has arrived, and Grace was pregnant on that trip.
Yeah.
And it was cool because we were there on Mother's Day last year. So it was like, celebrate some moms on Mother's Day. And I was just talking to Grace this morning about how we got to see all the baby animals. And it seemed like it was all on Mother's Day that all the little kids came. Baby giraffes and baby. It was what a good time.
That thing was cool. I know this isn't why we're on the podcast, but it was so cool because not only did we get to see baby animals, you know, giraffes and elephants and all this stuff. The other side of it was we got to see like lions and tigers, like, you know, like feeding and
up close.
Crazy thing that I, yeah, the really up close. And the crazy thing I tell people about the trip was we were around like lions and tigers and stuff. And there was no caging between, like there was nothing theoretically stopping them from ripping into us, except just, I guess, I don't know, a certain amount of trust and just familiarity with the Jeeps. But man, that was a cool trip. Just getting to see nature that close. It was awesome.
Hyenas and we saw some cheetahs, right?
Yep.
Oh man.
Yep. Saw cheetahs. We saw lions like who had just taken down like a warthog and they were tearing into that. And
yeah.
Oh my gosh. It was awesome.
So anyway, if you're listening to this and it wasn't on your bucket list before, I think now it probably should be. Definitely if you can get to Africa and see nature in nature, it is incredible. So
even if you think you don't want to, just like do it. You'll be so glad you did. Like just you and I are a good example of that, right? We were kind of not looking forward to it so much.
Kind of like, I don't think I want to sit on a Jeep for 8 hours a day and look at stuff. But man, I would go in a heartbeat right now.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. That, we were out a lot on a Jeep and it did not feel like it. I would have gone more. And honestly, the few times, because it was like couple times a day we'd go, the few people that would sometimes elect to sit back at the lodge and like relax, I'm like, what are you doing? When are you going to be out like this again? I would.
Yeah.
You couldn't get me out of that Jeep, man. I wanted to go.
Yeah, it was really such a fun trip. And now, you know, lockdown, COVID-19, we're all kind of living the quarantine life. It's a little bit different, but it was cool to see and everybody that we were on the trip with, because we went with our mastermind group.
Yep.
Right. So not only were we out on safari, but there was a couple of times where we locked ourselves into a beautiful conference room made out of like teak wood and talk about how to explode our business and mindset shifts and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was, and it got to be a write-off. So
exactly. Oh, it was so cool. Great, great times.
So fast forward to now, we are no longer in the same mastermind. You guys are doing wholesales and flips. We've moved into a commercial space. But the reason I wanted to have you come on is because you guys were such a big influence on the growth of our business and kind of the mindset shifts that you need to go through to really get to the next level or to even think something's possible. And what we talk about a lot on this show is you need to understand that what's working isn't working. What we're taught about money and finance and success, it's not real. It's not go to school, get a good job, work real hard, invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and ETFs, and then retire at 65 and enjoy your money for 13 years before you die.
Yep.
That's just wrong thinking. And I didn't know that, right? I mean, I went to a good school for college and I thought that was what I was supposed to do, and nothing wrong with college. My business partner did not go. I did go. Good experience. It taught me how to learn, which was great.
Yeah.
But I came out thinking, oh, I'm going to continue to grow automatically. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, so I started working in Manhattan and then I started, and then I was like, all right, I got to work for myself. I'm literally unemployable because I'm an entrepreneur at heart.
Yeah.
And we started that business. We went 5 years and no mastermind, no people around us. We were on an island, wasn't learning new principles about money, was just trying to figure out how to make a business work. And then it clicked. Hey, you know, we need to get around some people that are smarter than us, that are doing this business. And the biggest takeaway from joining the mastermind was the mindset shifts about money, the mindset shifts about success, the mindset shifts about how to build and grow and what that actually looks like internally. Yeah. Right. So that's why I wanted to sit down with you and chat, because I know that the mastermind is still a big part of your life. You guys are always inviting people in and growing that and teaching people. And what I love about it is, and it's no secret that the people that are running these masterminds are learning just as much as the people in the masterminds, because
sure. Yeah, 100%.
By virtue of being around that many people, it's impossible to not learn about other things that people are doing. So
absolutely.
So yeah, man. So tell us a little bit about kind of your background, where you came from. I love the fact that we met in the mastermind and did all these cool, crazy things together. But I don't know a ton about your backstory. So where'd you come from? How'd you get into some of this and where are you at now?
Yeah, definitely. So the cool thing about my background is it's so unimpressive that it's sort of what everyone can relate to it, right? I wasn't like born in any unique situations with a weird family. Like I was born in the Midwest, Michigan, born into basically an automotive family. The dream that as was taught to me was get a job in a union company, union like factory, sure, and work 35 years, do all the overtime and weekends that they'll give you, ask for a week or two off a year. You know, you got to sort of beg and plead to get that week off and do that and invest in, you know, 401k or whatever, and just do that for 35 years. And then, like you said, you're 65, you know, hopefully you have a few years left. You can enjoy a little bit. And that was sort of the dream that was presented to me and fed to me. And I bought into it because I was in a family. I didn't know any different. I was in the Midwest and there were no entrepreneurs in my family. Anybody who was pushing me to go out and kind of like pursue my dreams, it was like, no, forget, you know, and I was come from a family that was very much like, they didn't even like celebrate your dreams. They celebrated hard work.
Dreams? Squash those.
Yeah. Dreams are for kids. You know what I mean? You're 18. You need to go get a job. So I did. I started working for UPS like right out of high school. It's like union, Teamsters, benefits, like boom. I thought I had made it. My parents were ecstatic. Like I was ecstatic. I didn't go to college right out of high school. I thought, why?
Safe, secure, stable job.
I'm never going to leave. Like you have to pry my, you know, pry my dead fingers off this place. So anyways, fast forward a few years, I'm in my early 20s and I have chronic back problems. I mean, I hurt myself working at UPS, mostly my fault, just lifting improperly, whatever. But by the time I was 24, I needed to go to the chiropractor 3 times a week just to get out of bed. So it became apparent to me I could not retire from this company unless I was in management. But I pursued a couple of management opportunities that didn't pan out. And I'm like, you know what? I'm physically breaking down fast. Like, I can't continue to do this. So got out of there and started working for another company in the automotive industry. And then, and once again, I thought, I'm never leaving. I love this place. This is great. And I worked there for a while. And then this was, now we're kind of approaching 2000 and the automotive industry is sort of having its issues. And at some point in my early 30s, very early 30s, 30, 31, I realized I was a commodity. Like, I had no particular value over anybody else in my industry. There was an ocean of people without a college degree with some experience in the automotive industry that I had to admit, even at the time, to my wife, like, I don't even know if I would hire me with all the candidates available. Like, right. And if you don't even know if you would hire you, you've got a problem.
That's
so
a problem.
My thought was go back to college, get my degree. And I did. I went back to college. I had to go nights and weekends, and I had a family. I had kids and a house and a full-time job, but I did it. I went back and got a bachelor's degree in business administration and started applying it at other companies and bigger companies. And I got a job. I doubled my income. Basically, as soon as I got my degree, my income doubled.
Wow.
And I was kind of on a fast track. I was in an international company, mid-level management. I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to be here forever, right? And then a couple of years later, I was kind of like, man, this isn't great. Like, I'm sort of like you. I didn't realize, because I had been brought up in such a blue collar mentality, I didn't realize how miserable I was working for somebody. I knew that I was opinionated, and I knew that I rubbed people wrong everywhere in the company that I went. Like, it sounds terrible, and I've never said this in public before. I've talked to my wife about this, but like, when I left, like, I didn't have that many friends there. I had a couple of people that I was close to that I liked. But most people didn't like me because I just said what I thought. And if you're in a big company that has big company ways of doing things, that they've been doing it that way for decades, and you come in and go, why are we doing it like this? This doesn't even make sense. Why don't we do it like this? And then the answer is, because that's how we've always done it.
Right.
And if you're an entrepreneur at heart, where you're always looking for process improvements and how do we, it was like oil and water. They hated me making suggestions of how we can do things. And when we would go to do something that we had done 3 times and it had failed 3 times before, and I go, this is the 4th time we've done this, guys. Like, on this program, like, we did this 3 times before and it failed. It's going to fail. So
right.
Let's not do it. And they go, well, now hold on now. We have to give it a shot. It's like,
give it a shot.
And I was just like this annoyance in every meeting. Like, they hated me, right? So I knew I had to get out. So I started looking at other opportunities, other things I can do. And for a while, I wanted to be a day trader. Like, that was sort of my goal. Like, I'm going to be a day trader. I'm going to be on the stock market. It's going to be awesome. And what I found out was a key component of being successful at anything is not hating it with all your heart. And I hated stocks and stock market and all that. I hated it.
Why?
Boring. It was like reading insurance to me. I just didn't have the patience for it. It didn't excite me, and I didn't have the patience for it.
Yeah.
I couldn't force myself to stay on those sites to try to learn. And I would end up on like ESPN.com. And I would always be drifting off into something. I have a little bit of ADHD when it comes to like business. Like, I'm constantly looking for the next thing. I know you're very similar, but
yeah.
But eventually I stumbled onto real estate. And you know, when I was looking up investments and how to invest and what kind of things to invest in, real estate comes up. And when real estate hit my radar, it held my attention. I just loved it. I just fell in love with the concept. I started reading books and listening. They didn't really podcast back then, but I was like on sites and reading success stories and going to seminars and just really gathering all the information I could, and ended up getting my first house in 2008, which was a really interesting time in the real estate, real estate history. But it was the best time to get in, honestly. I mean, when most people are running from something, you might want to consider going toward it, because usually the masses are wrong. So
yeah. Travis always says, when the mailman's buying stock or this or that, it's time to get out.
Yeah, right? 100%. Like, yeah, and everyone was screaming back then. I'm sure you remember, real estate's awful. It's crashing. Get away from it. It's like, that's when, as an investor, you need to really be going in. So I started at a great time. And yeah, so that's how the real estate thing started. And my wife and I were partners at first, and we kind of just started doing one at a time back then.
Were you just doing flips, or were you holding rentals, or?
Just flips. Flips. We were doing flips. Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting. People always ask us, like, when we got started. We got started 10 years ago. So it was 2010, and still market hadn't come back yet, you know, so people were still hesitant about real estate, but
totally.
That's when we started flipping, and we did fine. So you guys are now doing wholesales, flips, you own some stuff to hold too.
Yes, yes, yes. And all the above. So we mostly still wholesaling. That's probably 80% of what we do, about 20% flips. And then I have a rental portfolio of about 18 properties that I maintain. So yeah, we're doing it all a little bit now, which is fine. I always tell people it's very difficult to try to do everything in the beginning. Like, you just can't be everything and learn everything. But I did flipping for 6 years exclusively. It's all I did. And I switched my motto to wholesaling. I kind of learned that. I feel like I nailed that. And then we slowly started introducing flips back into the equation where it made sense, kind of strategically. And then since 2014, I've been slowly accumulating rental properties when it made sense. So, I mean, we're in Michigan. So the rental properties that I have accumulated are all the result of finding properties that my buyers list turn their nose up to. And in Michigan, they'll turn their nose up to 14, 15% ROI. Like, they'll just go, nah, show me something better. You know, it's like, well, we're going to lose this deal because our buyers don't want it. I'm like, screw it. I'll take it. Like,
right.
I'll take 14% ROI. And by the way, we were marking it up, obviously. So I'm getting it at a lower price. So my ROI is even better, but it's like, I'll take it. So that's how I built my portfolio, basically doing that. Just taking the castaways.
And so we never did that. We always wholesaled and flipped, and price per door is prohibitive in New Jersey for rentals.
Right.
So where you guys are making 12 to 15%, we're making 5.
Yeah.
You know? So we just never accumulated a rental portfolio, but that's exactly why we've made the transition, is massive passive income, right? I mean, there is no retirement in sight unless you start that engine going.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's really interesting. So I didn't know that you wanted to day trade at some point. And it was funny because I had Bill on the podcast and he was talking about how he was doing a lot of stuff in the stock market at one point too.
Okay.
But everybody seems to go, all right, I can't figure this thing out, or it's too much work, or it's too boring, or whatever. Yeah. And you know, the whole reason we got into real estate is because when my dad passed away, he lost a lot of money in the crash, didn't live long enough to ride the wave back up. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here going, well, how do I insulate my family against that type of volatility and make sure that I'm leaving what I worked for, right? Because if you work your whole life and then lose half of it that you've saved, it's pretty devastating.
Yeah.
Not just to you, right? You're dead, you don't care. But your family could be significantly better. So, you know, we always talk about how you can hedge with tangible assets, right? Whether it's single family rentals or multifamily or self-storage units or whatever, there's the opportunity to hedge some downside. Even residential real estate, those rentals, as long as they're paying the mortgage, you're going to keep them. So even when the next market downturn does come, those renters still need a place to live.
Yep.
The mortgage isn't going anywhere. You're paying the mortgage. So I think that opportunity to get free from Wall Street is really what we try to preach here, because I think it's an important concept that people don't even know about until they get around a bunch of people like us going, no, we thought the same thing. I mean, I had 401ks. I had a 529 plan for my daughter. Right. I mean, it's all since been ripped out and put into commercial assets.
Yeah.
But because now I can figure out, based on what the returns are consistently, where my retirement will be, where my life will be, how much passive income I have, like it becomes a lot more tangible. I'm in a couple of Facebook retirement groups, and when the market's down, you should see it. It just goes a flutter. Yeah. And most of the answers are look away. Don't look at it. Keep your money there. It will come back eventually. And I'm just like, that's exactly the reason I'm running from that scenario.
Yeah, 100%.
So
dude, put your head in the sand is rarely the right strategy.
How's that the strategy? But if you talk to your financial advisor, he will tell you that that's what you should do, right? Hold on, white knuckle it. It'll eventually come back. He'll use some fancy words like dollar cost averaging. Yeah, over the last 20 years, this is what the market does. It has cycles, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, real estate beats the stock market every single time. I don't care what study or report you're looking at. So, good, man. So that's been a cool shift and journey. And now you're teaching other people how to take that leap. So tell us a little bit about the mastermind. I know about it, but tell the listeners about it.
So seven-figure flipping is a little higher level. We have a couple of different ways that you can enter it in terms of where you are in your business. If you're doing a little bit more volume, you know, 5 to 10 deals a month, I mean, there's a way to enter that's a little higher level, but it's high level networking, it's high level communication, it's high level sharing of ideas. I mean, I always equate it to it's like you have this group of scientists that all run out to their laboratories and they conduct experiments, and everyone's kind of doing different experiments, and they come back and share what worked and what didn't. So if you're interested in buying a little speed and understanding what works and what doesn't work, being in a mastermind like this definitely helps shortcut it. I'm living proof. When I joined Seven Figure Flipping, like most people back when we first started the group, Andy McFarland was sort of the guy, and that's who I turned to when I wanted to know what I needed to do in my business. And when I first met him, I was about 5 years behind him. So in other words, 5 years earlier, he was kind of where I was in business, and he was kind of having the same kind of traction. And I said, so what did you do in that 5 years? Like, we had a conversation, like, what exactly did you do? How did you go from where I am to where you are in 5 years? And what did you do wrong? And what did you do right? And you know, Andy's is like most generous guy in the world. So he's like laying it all out, what he did and what he did wrong and mistakes he made, what he would do differently next time. And I just thought, I went back to my partner, Mike, and I'm like, listen, it took him 5 years to figure this out with no map, like just bumping around and making mistakes. What if we just took everything he did and tried to compress it and do it in a shorter time frame? Could we do it in a year? And we were like, let's do it. So we did that. We compressed it all, and we didn't get quite to where he was, but we were at about a, you know, this is a manufacturing term, I think, but we were at like a $250,000 run rate. Like, so that was the pace we were on. And less than 12 months later, we had grossed over $1 million in profit. So it's like standing on the shoulders of people who have been there so you can kind of see what they can see. And that's exactly what we try to do. And if you're a little newer and you don't have that kind of experience behind you, and you've maybe only done a couple of deals, or maybe you're doing a couple here and there inconsistently, but you have the ability to invest in that kind of a mastermind where you can learn and accelerate things, then it's probably a good idea. I think at the very least, even if you don't join our mastermind, surrounding yourself with people who know more than you do is not just a luxury, it's critical. Like, you have to do that. And you mentioned it earlier, mindset. The funny thing is, I think a lot of people join the mastermind for the strategies and the tactics and the tools, that, and that's fine, that's why they join it. What they usually end up getting the most out of is the mindset. And you said it yourself, right? Like
100%.
All the strategies in the world are great, but if you don't have your mind in the right place, if you don't look at money right, or if you have some limiting beliefs or whatever, getting your mind straight is way, way, way more important than any specific strategy or tool that you're going to pick up. But you will get that, right? You surround yourself with the right people, your mind will shift to kind of conform to that group.
Yeah. And what I, so 100%, we joined because we knew other people could help cut the learning curve. We were already in the business for 5 years. We didn't even know that these things existed.
Yeah.
And then we heard it on a podcast and we were like, oh, maybe we should do this. And we bought kind of the weekend program, right? Where we just watched a bunch of videos of other people talking about what they were doing. And we came up for air on Monday and said, all right, we're going. We did 15 deals that year. And then the next year that we joined, we did over 100 and we did over $1 million. And it was sitting next to you going, wait, are you guys really going to go from 250 to $1 million in this period of time? We were 6 months behind you maybe. And we were watching going, they can do it. Oh, I could do it too. And everybody talks about the 4-minute mile. Nobody thought it was possible to do. And then somebody did it. And in quick succession, people continued to break it. So that mental barrier was huge for us. And then in the hallways of the mastermind, right? I mean, there's a lot of gold inside the classes, but in the hallways is where I would argue we got the most value in terms of like, oh, hey, check out this this life insurance policy that I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Why are you doing that? My whole family says whole life is stupid. Why would you do that? You're one of the smartest people I know. And then you start to see the aha moments come. It's like, oh, okay, so I should do this. And wait, how are you minimizing your tax liabilities? Because most of us just were paying 40% to 50% taxes before we got in the mastermind. And now it's, wait, I can avoid some taxes. How are you doing that? Here's how you can tax defer. Here's how you can invest in other things that'll offset your income. It's like, it changed everything for us. So not just strategically in the business, but really building a financial secure future for our families was laid out because you're right. Those scientists are going out and testing these things on their own lives and then coming back and going, hey, check out this cool trick I found. And it's like, oh, that cool trick just made me a millionaire.
I know.
So great.
Yeah, it's so true. People stand around and they're doing so much, and there's so many things that you can learn and from people that if you just stand around them long enough, like you said, in the hallways, and you're just kind of casually socializing, people will bring up things just like off the cuff that they're doing where you go, whoa, 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 hold on. What did you just say?
100%.
And to them, it's like, oh, okay, this isn't really, I didn't think anybody cared, but it's like, no, 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 that's, I need that. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, you're right. I've gotten so much just offhanded comments that people make where you go, whoa, hold on. You go over and you scoot closer to them and go, go through that again. I missed something here. How are you doing that? And
right,
it's amazing. And if you don't surround yourself with those people, if you don't put yourself in those rooms, man, I mean, a great example for me in Michigan, in my little bubble of the world, before I joined Seven Figure Flipping, I was sort of celebrated as this local kind of real estate investor celebrity. Like I had a lot of notoriety in my local market, and the guy in my local market who was doing the most volume, and I'm not saying the most volume means it's the most successful, like I get that, but the guy who was looked at as being the most successful person in our market did 26 transactions one year, and people were like, mind blown. And at that time I was doing 15 maybe. And I was like, I want to be that guy, you know? And that's fine because that's where I was at the time. But you start surrounding yourself with people who just look at things differently. It's almost like they unlock doors that you didn't even know were there, you know, in your mind. And you mentioned going to college, it taught you how to learn. Well, when I went back to college, I swear going back to college was the first step in unlocking like what I felt my potential was. Prior to that, I had a very nose to the grindstone mentality. I didn't really think much about what was possible. I just was dealing with what was happening that day in my job, right? But you go to college, it kind of unlocked this like bigger thinking. And then you start, the bigger thinking puts you in rooms with people who have different mindsets and a little bit more bigger thinking on their own. And then next thing you know, it's like you're exponentially thinking bigger than you ever have. And not only that, you're seeing the evidence of it, because the guy sitting next to you is where you want to be, or, you know, he's also trying to get to where you both want to be. And it becomes real when you can talk and sit with people that are there.
Yeah. And I think the biggest entrepreneurial indicator is when I'm in a room and I'm talking and somebody goes, well, why? Or why not? Or why not me?
Yeah.
Like, I look at people all the time and I'm like, not, I think I could do it better, but I can certainly do it just as well. Like, I have the ability to do that. There's no superheroes in success. Like, it's a team sport, number one. And number two is very rarely are people reinventing the wheel.
Like, yeah.
You can go and success is replicable. There are patterns and processes. Somebody else on the podcast said something cool. They said, success leaves evidence or success leaves crumbs. Like, you can follow it. There are indicators. And the first thing that really clicked when we joined the mastermind was, I was reading a little bit. I was reading a business book here or there. And then I'd getting around these guys and, you know, you have your bookshelf behind you. You just wrote a book. Like, and these people are reading a book a week, a book a month at least.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, why are you reading a book a week? And if you read, you'll know that most billionaires, most millionaires read a lot. Yeah. We actually started interviewing for our company. And one of the interview questions was, what was the last book you read and when?
Yeah.
And it is telling. I mean, prepare for the answers because it is cringeworthy what you will get when you ask.
50 Shades of Gray, 2 years ago.
I got one guy who was like 58 and he said, college textbook. And I was like, you haven't picked up a, he's like, no, I read newspapers and I watch the news. And I was like, wow, talk about spoon feeding yourself some trash. Right? Yeah. Like, that's not where I'm getting the information and success tips that I need. Right. To create a financial future for my family that I want.
Heck no.
So once I started reading more and then understanding that all this knowledge was out there for the taking, then I would just start reading a bunch of stuff. So yeah, the mindset shifts, getting around people that are smarter than you, implementing those tactics. I mean, just find what wealthy people are doing and go do that. Right?
Yeah. The great thing is two things. Number one, there's no shortage of ways to be successful in business. There's a million ways to skin that cat. The other thing is I realized, and this is no slight to anybody who's successful that I met, but a barrier to entry is not being the smartest person in the world. Like
right.
A lot of people I know that are successful, they're very smart people, but that's incidental. It has nothing to do with their success. You know what I mean? Because I've also met people that are really successful where I go, wow.
Wow. How did you manage that?
I can do it. You know, so being the smartest person on earth, like, don't think you're not smart enough. You are. Really what it is if you're not successful, you're not kind of pursuing your dreams or going down that path, it has way more to do with lack of action than it does lack of intelligence. It's not even lack of information. You can get the information you need, but it's people, you know, and I did this for a while. I talk about it all the time. Like my podcast is Just Start Real Estate. I'm such an advocate of starting, stop talking, get out there and just start doing it, right?
Yep.
But the little known secret that I don't talk about a ton, but I do talk about it, is it took me like 5 years to do my first deal because I got paralysis analysis. I started going to seminars and reading books and I wasn't taking action. So I speak from experience. I'm not being hypocritical. I was there. I know what it feels like to be stuck in this, like, I'm not quite ready. I'll do it next month. I know what that feels like. But yeah, once I started taking action, it was like a drug. Like I got addicted to massive action. And yeah, until you get addicted or at least embrace massive action, you're going to struggle.
In my opinion. All the books in the world won't help you do anything, right? You have to take that information, you have to apply it, do it. And that's where our whole career started too. And now we get to educate other people that, hey, the opportunities are out there. You are probably just ignorant of them. You probably just don't know about them yet, or you know about them and you're too scared. So get around those people, take massive action. Mike, it's been awesome catching up with you, man. I know that people are going to want to reach out to you. And so tell us a little bit about where they can find you. You have a book that is amazing. So tell people where they can go and find that. Tell us everything.
Yeah, man. I mentioned earlier, I have a podcast called Just Start Real Estate. So if you go to, you can find me everywhere, Stitcher, everywhere, iTunes, Just Start Real Estate. So check that out. That would be great. Also, I do have a book coming out called Level Jumping, How I Grew My Business to Over $1 Million in Profits in Less than 12 Months. We talked about that a little bit. I get asked all the time, well, how did you do it? What did you do? You know, how did that happen? And I lay it out in the book. So it's not really real estate specific. All the anecdotes and stories that I tell in the book are real estate related because that's my business. That's what I do. But I truly believe the principles are applicable to really any business. It's about growing a business and scaling. It's really what it's about. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out on Amazon as this is being aired. It should be out. So if you go to Amazon, look for Level Jumping, you can find that. I would appreciate that. And then also if you're on Instagram and interested, I'm there too at Mike S. Simmons on Instagram. So you can go there and check me out.
Awesome. And the first 5 people to comment below on this podcast, I will personally buy you a copy of Level Jumping and send it out to you guys. So
nice.
Make sure you like, subscribe, make a comment, tell Mike what he did to help you out today, and you'll get a copy of his book for free on me.
All right, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Free from Wall Street podcast. We will speak to you next time.
Thank you for listening. Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and head over to freefromwallstreet.com and sign up for our free guides to help you and your family invest with purpose.